Hello and welcome everyone to this podcast series on the ACG monograph on GI diseases and endoscopy in pregnancy and postpartum period. I'm Shivangi Kothari from the University of Rochester, and I was the woman in GI committee chair for the American College of Gastroenterology when we undertook this task for updating the ACG monograph. And this series of podcasts will go over each chapter and details of what these each chapter and the updates that they provide for current best practice approaches and guideline-based recommendations in the treatment of various GI liver disorders and endoscopic practice in the pregnancy and postpartum period.
Hi, everyone. So today in our podcast of the pregnancy monograph, we have Dr. Shahal here to talk about advanced endoscopy procedure in pregnancy, which is a very in topic right now. And it's very important for us to know what to do in those cases. So thank you so much for being here and for joining us. And if you're ready, I'm just going to start asking you some questions.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Dr. Sarkis, for having me.
So my first question is actually, why is the risk of developing conidocolitis so high in pregnant women?
Yeah, so I would start with some statistics. I know people generally don't like hearing the statistics, but gallstone or sludge can appear in up to 12 to 30% of the pregnancies. That is one third of the pregnant patients. And they can be symptomatic with colidocolithiasis, which is reported in about 1 in 1,200 deliveries. So not an unusual occurrence. Pregnancy itself significantly raises the risk of gallstone formation due to hormonal influences. You have elevated estrogen and progesterone, so high estrogen level increases the cholesterol secretion into bile. It creates a cholesterol supersaturated bile, and simultaneously high progesterone, it decreases the gallbladder motility, so you have a double whammy. It causes bile stasis and stone formation. This risk, it multiplies with subsequent pregnancies, and it becomes approximately tenfold higher in multiparous women compared to nulliparous.
That's very interesting. And I guess because it's so frequent to have colidocolitiasis in pregnant women, I think we should just try to figure out what are the indication to do an ERCP during pregnancy and if there's an ideal timing to do so.
Yes, again, another excellent question. So ERCP during pregnancy should strictly be limited to urgent therapeutic indications, which mainly include symptomatic colidocolithiasis, acute cholangitis, confirmed gallstone pancreatitis with persistent biliary obstruction, and patients who may have had sustained ductal trauma. Elective and diagnostic ERCP should be avoided. The second trimester is the safest period for ERCP due to completed fetal organogenesis and less pronounced uterine enlargement. So procedures during first trimester, they carry higher risk of spontaneous abortion and congenital anomalies, whereas third trimester interventions, they face the technical challenges because of the gravid uterus and the risk of preterm labor.
Okay. And is radiation per se, does it affect the fetus or the woman more so in pregnancy?
So the question whether there are increased maternal and fetal. So whenever we are dealing with a pregnant woman, you're dealing with two lives. Right. So maternal complications with ERCP procedure in a pregnant woman would be exactly similar, but a little bit more pronounced. So risks include like post-ERCP pancreatitis, bleeding, infection, perforation. Pregnancy independently, it increases the risk of post-ERCP pancreatitis to 12 to 16%. And you compare that to non-pregnant patients, it's only 5%. So fetal risks, they are mainly related to the radiation exposure. And they include preterm labor, fetal distress, low birth weight. But despite these risks, long-term studies, they do tell us that there's no significantly increase in congenital malformations or developmental issues following ERCP when appropriate safety measures are observed.
Okay. Can you tell us more about those safety measures? What precaution should we take during ERCP?
Oh, yes, absolutely. When we talk about fetal radiation exposure, we talk about two different types of risk, deterministic and stochastic. So deterministic risks, they include miscarriage and congenital anomalies that they primarily occur when the dose is above 50 to 100 milligrays. And stochastic risks similarly, which include potential cancers, they occur at an extremely high radiation dose. And when we talk about standard ERCP, the typical radiation doses during standard ERCP is 0.01 to 5.77 milligray. So it's an extremely small dose, and they are extremely low thresholds when we perform ERCP with proper precautions. When we look at the modern recommendations from all the different societies, including American Association of Physicists in Medicine, they emphasize minimal radiation protocol, what we call as ELARA, through advanced fluoroscopy techniques, which include, you know, you're limiting the fluoroscopy duration, you're not taking the spot films, you're employing low radiation protocols, you're using optimal beam collimation, pulse fluoroscopy, saving the last image, and of course, avoiding unnecessary imaging. Routine fetal shielding is no longer recommended because of the potential interference with imaging and minimal benefits in the modern fluoroscopy machines.
Well, it's encouraging to see that we can, you know, decrease the risk of radiation and that the risks are not as high as we initially thought. Is there, you know, like new modalities that would just avoid radiation altogether for like, you know, stent and ERCP and stuff like that?
Oh, absolutely. So radiation-free ERCP can be performed. It's feasible and it's effective in experienced centers using methods like wire-guided cannulation, confirmation through bile aspiration, direct visualization via cholangioscopy or ultrasound-guided techniques. Clinical studies, they do support ductal clearance and safe stent placement without fluoroscopy, and it significantly reduces the fetal exposure to radiation. And minimal fluoroscopy may occasionally be necessary for procedural safety and accuracy, but again, you can limit that by using a short burst if required.
Okay, thank you so much. You said in the previous questions that, you know, there's an increased risk of post-ERCP pancreatitis in pregnant women. Is it the same, you know, mechanism that increases the risk of choledocholithiasis as well?
So absolutely right. So that does play a role. So pregnant women, they do have higher risk of post-ERCP pancreatitis, 2 to 3 times higher, as mentioned earlier. And there are factors which contribute to this, which, again, some of the technical things that we discussed, we are using limited fluoroscopy, and people, they place fewer pancreatic stents in pregnant women, restricted use of non-steroidal prophylaxis due to potential fetal harm. And of course, finally, hormonal and anatomical changes. You're dealing with a gravid uterus. These changes related to pregnancy, their mother may further predispose pregnant women to pancreatitis by altering the pancreatic papillary dynamics, and they complicate the ductal cannulation.
And let's say we need to take, you know, imaging for women or for pregnant women to try to assess if there's a choledocholithiasis or cholelithiasis. Is there a particular imaging modality that you would consider safe and preferable in those cases?
Yeah, so ultrasound obviously it remains the safest imaging tool without any fetal risks. MRI, MRCP without gadolinium contrast is also safe and highly effective. Endoscopic ultrasound, it provides you very precise visualization of biliary structures, and it helps avoid unnecessary ERCPs. CT and nuclear imaging studies, they involve radiation exposure and should be reserved for critical indications. And if they are needed, using low-dose protocols, shielding and informed consent discussions to minimize fetal risk should be employed.
Thank you so much. Do you have any last take-home points?
Yes, I think ERCP during pregnancy is safe when indicated by urgent therapeutic needs, with second trimester being optimal for elective procedures. Multidisciplinary collaboration, it enhances maternal and fetal safety. We should focus on radiation safety efforts on advanced fluoroscopy techniques, minimizing fluoroscopy duration and applying ELARA principles rather than relying on routine fetal shielding. We should anticipate and mitigate the increased pancreatitis risk by optimizing procedural techniques, employing prophylactic measures, and selecting expert proceduralists. Prioritizing maternal health directly benefit fetal outcomes, so reinforcing timely and expert intervention when clinically justified is the key to success and safety.
Well, Dr. Shahal, thank you so much for this today. I think this was very informative. I really loved your article, and this is even, you know, a better emphasis of everything you've done with your co-writer and co-authors. Thank you so much for joining us today. Have a great day.
Thank you so much, Dr. Sarkis. And I would like to acknowledge my co-authors, Dr. Amrita Sethi and Subhash Banerjee, for this. Appreciate it.